President Raisi says Iran will in no way back down from its demands, and that after Tehran, the EU announced plans to resume talks on reviving their 2015 deal within days. Dozens of flights are canceled across Europe as staff from budget Irish airline Ryanair go on a strike to protest their working conditions. Plus, heads of Group of Seven leading economies are getting together in Germany for a summit amid protests against the gathering. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafieh. Good to have you with us. The Iranian president has slammed the recent anti-Tehran resolution by the IAEA's Board of Governors. It says the measure won't force the Islamic Republic to back down from its stance in the Vienna talks.
Negotiations will continue. We don't want to stop the talks, but we have said many times that this resolution cannot force us to back down from a stance. Our negotiators will engage in dignified negotiations to restore the rights of the Iranian people. This has been stressed in meetings with European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell.
In a televised interview, Raisi said that the improper resolution was put forward while Iran was in the middle of the JCPOA revival talks and cooperating fully with the IAEA. The comments came shortly after Iran's foreign minister and EU foreign policy chief met in Tehran and announced talks on reviving the 2015 deal will resume in the coming days. Josep Borrell also met with the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council. Ali Shamkhani told him Iran's remedial measures in the nuclear sector are a legal and national response to U.S. unilateralism and Europe's inaction. He added that Tehran will continue the measures as long as the West's illegal practices aren't changed.
It takes an in-person visit to Iran by the EU foreign policy chief now to revitalize the ailing 2015 deal between Iran and world powers. Josep Borrell said his two-day trip to Tehran is aimed at removing the last remaining roadblocks to concluding the Vienna talks, which have been at a stalemate since March this year.
My visit has one main objective. It was to break the current dynamic of escalation and to break the stalemate of the negotiations on the JCPOA.
The talks in Vienna began in April last year with the aim of returning the United States to the 2015 deal and ensuring Tehran's full compliance with its commitments. The negotiations have been stalled since March amid differences between Tehran and Washington. Iran says the United States, which is not directly engaged in the talks, must remove all its anti-Iran sanctions before Tehran returns to its full compliance with the accord.
We hope that the Americans will this time be realistic and act responsibly on the path toward achieving an agreement.
Borrell says it's in no one's interest that the pause in the talks persists, urging Tehran and Washington to resume the talks as soon as possible.
There are decisions that have to be taken in Tehran and in Washington. But we agree today that this visit will be followed by the resumption of negotiations also between Iran and U.S., facilitated by my team to try to solve the last outstanding issues.
Iran welcomed Borrell's call. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says his country is ready to resume the talks within the next few days.
First of all, Iran is ready to get back to the talks in the coming days. Secondly, what is important for the Islamic Republic is that Iran should enjoy the economic benefits promised under the agreement that was signed in 2015.
Iran started to scale back its obligations to the 2015 deal following Washington's unilateral withdrawal from the accord in 2018 and its ensuing imposition of sanctions on Iran. That triggered a series of talks between Iran and the remaining parties to the deal in Vienna to salvage the accord.
The Vienna discussions have for months been in limbo as a result of serious demands that neither sides of the bargain are willing to give up on. However, Borrell sees a glimmer of hope at the end of the tunnel, promising to help Tehran and Washington sort out the last remaining issues when the talks will resume in the upcoming days. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A senior Palestinian resistance official is warning that an upcoming visit by U.S. President Biden to the region is aimed at undermining the Palestinian struggle against the Israeli occupation. The head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, says the visit is also part of efforts to increase Israel's clout. Biden will travel to Israel in mid-July, and from there he'll directly fly to Saudi Arabia. And he also called for the unity and integration of all resistance fronts in the region to counter Israeli infiltration. He warned of U.S.-Israeli plots for regional realignments that go beyond normalization deals with a number of Arab countries. Haniyeh says that that involves the inclusion of Israel in regional military and security coalitions to counter the resistance front in Palestine and across the region. Israeli firefighting teams are trying to contain a massive fire that has ripped through a number of industrial structures in the city of Haifa. According to Palestinian sources, the huge blaze broke out at industrial facilities containing hazardous materials. Several explosions were heard in the area. Firefighting crew are on the ground trying to keep the fire from spreading to surrounding areas. Many of the homes in the immediate vicinity have been evacuated as a precautionary measure. Three people have reportedly been rescued. A huge plume of smoke has blanketed the region. Haifa has seen similar incidents recently. Well, turning to Europe now, a wave of airline strikes is hitting the continent amid a widespread labor unrest. Airline staffers in Britain, Italy, France, and Spain are staging walkouts demanding better pay and working conditions. Hundreds of flights have been canceled due to staff shortages. In Spain, the transport union says the strike and staff are being replaced by temporary workers brought in from other countries. But the action is criticized for violating the right to strike. Earlier this week, some 40,000 railway workers in Britain staged a three-day strike over pay disputes, affecting thousands of commuters. Concerns are growing about a summer of strikes across Europe. The continent is currently suffering from skyrocketing inflation and stagnant economic growth. The aviation industry is already under pressure due to staff shortages caused by mass layoffs during the pandemic. In the meantime, protests and strikes continue in Italy as the country is suffering from sharply rising energy costs and growing inflation. Movements and associations representing different layers of society protested in the capital, Rome, on Friday, demanding better working conditions. From Rome, Max Civili has a report.
As Italy's socioeconomic conditions worsen by the day, the country is witnessing an endless number of protests and strikes. On Friday, the Italian Association of Private Construction and Building Technicians staged a protest against the government's decision to suspend the so-called Superbonus scheme. The measure, which granted homeowners access to a tax credit of up to 110% on the cost of upgrading their home, was introduced in 2020 in an attempt to counter the nefarious effects on the economy of the COVID crisis.
This bonus was a real blessing for us. Finally, after decades, we stopped lowering our bids. But suddenly, not only the price of building materials sharply increased, but also the government stopped funding the scheme under the pretext that some companies were cheating.
The government should be ashamed. Building companies are going bankrupt. 200,000 workers will soon lose their job. We are furious.
Meanwhile, taxi drivers across Italy have staged the umpteenth strike action, disrupting traffic in several cities. Taxi drivers are on the warpath with the government over an EU directive which aims at liberalizing the sector.
The National Bureau of Statistics, ISTAT, has said household consumer confidence has plummeted in June amidst great preoccupation for energy rising costs and for the ramifications of the Ukraine crisis. Quite surprisingly, consumer confidence is up for the second consecutive month.
Also on Friday, USB-based union staged a protest at the Ministry of Economic Development against, quote, Italy's unsustainable precarization of work. USB says young Italians are only offered temporary, badly paid jobs.
Salaries in Italy haven't grown for over 30 years. Nevertheless, military spending is on the rise. Ours is the EU country with the highest number of contracts regulating badly paid casual work.
Italians are also very worried about the water drought that has afflicted the country over the past weeks. Several regions are mulling over introducing water rationing to manage the limitation of water.
The Lombardy region on Friday declared a state of emergency for drought after water levels in the Po River fell by over three quarters amid the worst drought in 70 years. Max Civili, Rome.
Leaders of the group of seven leading economic powers are gathering in the Bavarian Alps in Germany for a three-day summit. The talks will focus on the current global energy shortages and soaring prices worsened by the Russia-Ukraine war. The G7 leaders are expected to show a united front on supporting Ukraine and ramping up pressure on Moscow. The global food crisis and climate change will also be at the heart of conversation. Thousands of police officers are tasked with ensuring security for the visiting leaders. Just the day before the summit, 4,000 people turned out in the streets of Munich for a largely peaceful protest. There were minor reports of the scuffles with police. The protesters are critical of globalization. The other demands include a phasing out of fossil fuels, social justice, and greater efforts to combat hunger. Russia is striking Kiev with missiles again after a three-week lull in bombardments. Four blasts shook the city in the early hours of the morning. At least five people have been injured. Kiev's mayor says the rescue operation is underway to evacuate residents from a residential complex that was a target of the attack. Russia's newest attack on the capital comes a day after its army took over Severodonetsk. The key industrial hub was the scene of a strict battle for weeks before the Ukrainian army finally withdrew its forces. As the war enters its fifth month, the seizure of Severodonetsk in the embattled Donbass region marks an important strategic win for Moscow. Meantime, Ukraine has been pushing the Western arms suppliers for more heavy weaponry to be able to confront the Russian offensive. Now, fears that the Russia-Ukraine war could lead to a wider conflict are growing as tensions keep escalating between Moscow and Kiev's Western supporters. In the latest development, NATO countries have taken more measures against Russia in response to its move to cut off gas. And that has raised concern that the Ukraine war can easily turn into a direct confrontation between Russia and the West.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says the European Union and NATO are gathering a coalition for war with Moscow. This after the EU unanimously granted candidacy status to Ukraine and Moldova. Lavrov drew parallels between current-day events and those of the first half of the 20th century when Germany was preparing an attack on the Soviet Union.
When the Second World War was about to start, Hitler gathered most of the European countries under his banners. Now the EU and NATO are also gathering the same modern coalition for the fight, and by and large for war with the Russian Federation. We will look at this very carefully.
Lavrov's remarks came after the EU leaders stepped up rhetoric against Russia.
EU's decision strengthens Ukraine and Moldova in the face of Russian aggression.
A confrontation between Moscow and NATO's nuclear-armed members would have catastrophic consequences for Europe. After all, Europe would be the immediate theater of such a war.
In terms of the possibilities of war, NATO fighting a war with Russia, I don't think they are very good. First of all, because the United States will not suffer as a result of this war. The Europeans will suffer. The Europeans, if they start down this path, they will unleash a nuclear war, in which case their entire, all of the NATO countries will be destroyed, all of the NATO bases. It will be a catastrophe for these people. And I think the leaders of the three major countries, Germany, France, and Italy, I think they understand this. And I think that's why they have been going to Kiev to have discussions with President Zelensky. They know that the people, this is not in their interest.
Candidate status is only the first step on the path to EU membership, which can take decades. But putting the EU action in the context of the current state of affairs, we can see that the rising escalation might quickly lead to catastrophic consequences.
Tensions have been escalating between the West and Russia over a number of issues. Moscow is strongly opposed to the West's military support for Kiev and has already warned of serious consequences. And now the Kremlin is outraged at the EU for what it calls blockading Kaliningrad, a Russian exclave in the Baltic.
Tensions are also increasing between the EU and Russia over the growing Kaliningrad crisis. This after Lithuania began enforcing the EU sanctions and restricted the transit of goods to Kaliningrad. Moscow says the move amounts to a blockade of its exclave and has warned of serious consequences.
As for retaliatory measures and what they will be like, will they be exclusively in the diplomatic dimension? The answer is no. They will not be in the diplomatic dimension. They will be practical.
A move by Russia on Lithuania would clearly trigger NATO's Article 5 mutual defense provision, immediately pulling in all the alliance's members to a potential nuclear war with Russia. But how far can the Europeans really push for such an escalatory path with Russia, especially at a time when they are experiencing an energy crisis?
If you're asking me personally, I personally think that the main reason for the war in the Ukraine was to block the alliance between Germany and Russia. And the symbol of that alliance was the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which never got opened. As a result, now Germany is in a critical crisis because Russia has control of its energy. Russia just dialed down 40% of its energy. Germany cannot survive under these conditions. It is not in Germany's interest to commit suicide for the United States of America.
On Thursday, Ukraine said it had received U.S. supplies of high-mobility artillery rocket systems, a powerful long-range weapon system that Kiev hopes can help turn the tide on Russia's military offensive. Russian officials have repeatedly warned that the U.S. decision to supply Ukraine with advanced rocket systems could exacerbate the conflict.
Moving on, people take to the streets in different cities across the United States for a second day to protest the Supreme Court decision to end abortion rights. Thousands gathered outside a top court in Washington carrying signs that called the decision a war on women. Similar events were held in Los Angeles the day after city witnessed violent clashes between police and women's rights activists. Abortion rights were introduced as a constitutional protection for women 50 years ago, but at least 8 conservative-led states have imposed bans on the procedure, and several others are planning to do the same in the coming weeks. The Supreme Court's ruling has also drawn criticism from Democratic President Joe Biden, who has called the move shocking. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, June 26, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, or messages. So, contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Or if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us, an electronic QSL card from us. So here, I do send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain, and Paul Walker from the U.S. So, Mizanur Rahman, Paul, and Juan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And here, I do send my warm gratitude to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails from around the world, including an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, Francis Lawlor from Ireland. From Italy, we've received an email from Nico Genovese. Here we have an email from Netherlands from Rob Den Boer. And Owen Williams from England has sent us a piece of email, which after short music, I will read these emails. Please stay with us. This is Listeners Special, and I'm here to read these great emails from around the world. Jayanta Chakrabarty, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us an email. So let's see what Jayanta says. Dear staff, as a long-time regular listener to my favorite radio station, I send my greetings and good wishes to IRIB English team for presenting attractive and interesting programs that truly enhances my knowledge of the great nation of Iran. Please receive my feedback on one of your broadcasts of June 20th, 2022, which I accessed in 25-meter shortwave band. Reception quality was fairly good with a strong signal strength. Presentation of program was cheerful and friendly. It would be a pleasure to have any report verified at your end with a printed QSL card. I would be delighted to receive some Iranian postage stamps for collection if it is possible from your end. Wishing all IRIB English staff good health and safety. With warm regards from India. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, please accept our warm appreciations and gratitudes to you for sending us such a detailed email. You know, you discussed about the quality of the programs, and we value this support and commitment to our radio. And of course, your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. It was an honor to receive this email from you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. And thank you very much to tell us your views about the, you know, about the quality of the programs, about the quality of the signals and the signal strength, which you described. It was, as you described, as fairly good with a strong signal. And as you describe the quality of the program as good. Thank you very much for telling us your views about our programs. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, as for your request about sending you paper QSL card or any material, including postage stamps, I have to repeat this point, that sending any material on behalf of our radio at the time of pandemic, unfortunately, it's not possible. So for the time being, before this virus is eradicated from around the world, please accept our electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, thank you again. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And from Ireland, as I said, we've received an email from Francis Lalor. Let's see what Francis says. Dear friends, I am a collector of QSL cards. I would like to have a QSL from your station, please. I heard IRIB in English a few days ago on 9855 kHz. The program, part of the Quran, describing what paradise is like. This was followed by another talk with reference to the Quran as well. Thank you very much and very best wishes. Salam and warm greetings to you, Francis Lalor from Ireland. Thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. So, you listened to a part of the program about the Noble Quran describing, as you said, what paradise is like, followed by another talk with reference to the Quran as well. Thank you very much for telling us your views about our programs. So, you are a collector of QSL cards, and that's great. It's a kind of hobby for some people around the world. As you know, we are in the time of pandemic. However, the coronavirus pandemic is almost over in Iran because most of the people are vaccinated. So the number of deaths regarding coronavirus is zero in Iran, fortunately, thank God. But as far as the pandemic is still around the world, so we cannot send any mail post for our listeners. So for the time being, please accept an electronic QSL card in your collection, because as you said, you collect QSL cards from different radio stations from around the world. So for the time being, we send you our electronic QSL card as a confirmation to your email, Francis Lalor from Ireland. Francis, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio. So after a short break, I will be back with an email from Nico Genovese. Stay with me. Welcome back. As I said, Nico Genovese from Italy has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Nico says. Dear friends of IRIB, my name is Nico Genovese and I am an Italian radio listener. I am writing to send you a reception report made a few minutes ago. I enclosed two short recordings of the listening that I made with my receiver. I hope to receive your confirmation with EQSL to my mail. Best regards from Italy. Salam and warm greetings to you, Nico Genovese from Italy, and thank you very much for sending us this email. We are happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are well received in your region, in Italy. You sent us, two short recordings of the listening you had from your receiver. Thank you for that. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Nico, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. So, from the Netherlands, we've received an email from Rob den Boer. Rob says, "Dear Voice of Iran Radio," he means IRIB English Radio, Glad to confirm your broadcast today. Please verify my audio recording. And if correct, please verify by your EQSL. Thank you very much. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, salam. And warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. So, you want an EQSL card as a confirmation, so that's what we do. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation to your email. Thank you very much for sending us this email. And after a short break, we will be back with an email from Owen Williams. Stay tuned. This is Listen as a Special, your program, the Sunday program. And as I said, Owen Williams from England has sent us a piece of email. Owen says, I am listening to your radio right now. I am listening from Bristol in southwestern of England. Considering this, the signal is very reasonable. There is a lot of local electrical noise at my location, but despite this, the broadcast is totally readable. I have attached a short audio clip of what I have received. I will listen to for your English language services in future. Do you have a schedule of English broadcast? I would be very grateful if you could send me a QSL card to verify my reception report. I wish you all the best, and I hope to hear your English programs again in the future. Take care, and 73s. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to Owen Williams from England. And we are so happy that the signals of our radio, IRIB English Radio, is heard in Bristol. As you said, it is located in southwestern England. You find our, signals totally readable, and that's great. As you said, you consider the signals of IRIB English Radio very reasonable, and it's good. You've attached a short audio clip of what you caught up from IRIB English Radio. Yes, we received it. Thank you for that. And my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And to find the archive of our programs, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Owen Williams from England, thank you very much for sending us this email and briefing the quality of our program. So we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Dear listeners, before wrapping up this program, I want to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Paul Walker from the US, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, Francis Lawlor from Ireland, Nico Genovis from Italy, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, and the last but not the least, Owen Williams from England. Thank you very much for being with your program, Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaveh Taqvi. It's deemed to be a major announcement from Iran's capital, Tehran. Iran and the European Union say the talks on reviving the 2015 Iran deal will resume in the coming days. Yet what is not said here is why there was a break in the talks in the first place, namely how the U.S. prevented for the talks to actually progress. Another issue, whether the U.S. will make the or have the political will to make the decision, that is, lift sanctions and not lay down any new conditions. Just some of the angles we'll be discussing in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guest for this program. Political analyst Said Mostafa Khoshchesh joins us from the capital, Tehran. Also joining us is political analyst Elijah Magnier, who joins us from Marseille in France.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. I will start with you first, Said Mostafa Khoshchesh, since you're here in the capital, Tehran, and I'm sure you saw the press conference. What do you think?
Hello, Kaveh. Thanks for having me. I'm not sure if you have my picture or not.
Yes, we do.
I believe you're just having my voice. Despite the very fact that some might see the development today as a major positive development since Borrell and the Iranian foreign minister both promised, imminent resumption of talks, I don't see much of a breakthrough here. Yes, that they were speaking in positive words, but there have been problems, some unresolved issues regarding removal of some sanctions that have remained on the table, and also with regard to some parts of the guarantees. These are two of the main issues that have remained unresolved. And, Iran presented its own initiative last month when Mora was in Tehran. They were happy. I mean, Mora and Joseph Borrell, after he went back to Europe, Borrell heard the Iranian initiative. They were happy. But as soon as they saw the reaction of the Americans, they were upset again. And those remaining issues are still over there, unresolved, while the Americans have stated that they would now remove the sanctions on the IRGC, as Rob Mali said during the Senate hearing last month. And the following day, the U.S. President Joe Biden said that the window of opportunity for giving any more merits in any, area has been shut down, meaning that basically there won't be any need for further talks. Because when you say that I'm not going to, give any kind of concessions, why should there be any kind of talks? So basically today, it was another case of Joseph Borrell's positive gesture in order to give some kind of momentum to the talks that have, been there at a standstill situation, and there's not been any major development. So he wants to push it forwards. He wants to set the stage and provide a positive atmosphere and give him momentum and bring the talks back to the headlines, to see if there could be any progress in the talks.
Okay. Well, this is what the EU foreign policy, amongst many statements, has made there, Elijah Magnier. One of them, he said he was pleased a decision to resume the talks had been accepted both in Tehran and Washington. So the basic question comes here is that what did he do, or, as to use his word, facilitate? I'm not sure what facilitate means. Maybe you can tell us that also, Elijah Magnier. But what did either Tehran or Washington, or should I say the EU also in that mix, make in order for this to resume?
The only way for the talk to move forward is for the U.S. to accept to give up some concessions and to offer some guarantee that Iran is asking. Unless Iran is ready to give concession from its side, accepting that any deal can last for 2 years only, as long as President Biden is in power, accepting also that perhaps, or trusting that he's not going to implement other sanctions under different titles. So maybe that is the way for the deal to forward, even if it's not going to last for very long, because we don't know the identity of the next president. So we see Iran very adamant of asking for guarantee how this is going to be respected, and how Biden himself, before even ending his term, is not going to come back from the window and impose other sanctions on Iran under different titles and say this is not related to the JCPOA. So all these concern and lack of trust, this is why agreements are made to be signed. However, the lack of trust also in the U.S., because even if they sign an agreement, it doesn't mean they will abide by it, because we've seen not only the JCPOA revoked in 2018, but we also have seen treaties in Kaliningrad with Russia and the EU, and other treaties are not respected and international laws thrown out of the windows. So when I hear Joseph Borrell saying this is against the international law, since when Europe has respected the international law, particularly related to the JCPOA, because it didn't respect its end of the deal. Not only the U.S., but the EU was afraid of honoring the deal. So I don't know how this is going to work out, and I am honestly, I doubt about it.
Well, it's very hard to understand Joseph Borrell, said Mostafa Khoshesh, when he gets on that podium, as he did today. I'm not trying to criticize him, but I'm just trying to understand what's going on. And he talks about how well, the EU is going to be the facilitator, and that he's very happy that these talks are going to progress. When just weeks ago at the EU Board of Governors, that was a different story when that anti-Iran resolution was passed. How do you come, the Iranian side, how would they trust that entity called the EU through Borrell to then be optimistic to move forward? I mean, how does that work out?
Well, you're right. As a matter of fact, they've been, you know, helping the United States to pressure Tehran, including their resolution at the Board of Governors of the IAEA. But they, at the same time, they try to pretend to be the middleman, the neutral party, which has never been the case. After the U.S. exited the deal and dropped out of the deal very illegally, they promised to make up for the lost interests, you know, promised to Tehran. And they took Tehran and discouraged Rouhani's administration from taking reciprocal action for 14 months. They promised, they made promises, but they have never done anything. As a matter of fact, they've just been party to the deal when it was being endorsed. Otherwise, they've never been an independent party to provide Tehran with any kind of merit all throughout the past several years. They have never punished the United States. They had the possibility to work on legal mechanisms in order to, you know, fine the companies, the private sector companies, to avoid obedience to the United States and encourage them to defy the U.S., you know, illegal unilateral sanctions against Iran. But they never did that. As a matter of fact, there have been more than 100 major EU state companies that could have worked with Iran even after the U.S. dropped out of the deal, but they never pressured the states in Europe. They never pressured their own state companies to stay under the deal and to work with Tehran. That's a breach, a significant breach of the paragraphs 25, 6, or 4 of the JCPOA. But let me remind you here that the U.S. seems to be very much adamant here to comply with, you know, the undertakings that it has under the JCPOA, because for the last 3 months, there's been some kind of war of willpower between the two sides, Iran and the United States here, who are the main actors nowadays when it comes to the Vienna talks. And the Americans, after the Iranians invited Mora and offered him their new initiative, the Americans, you know, they came forward and said that they would not grant any kind of concessions, not only with regard to the IRGC sanctions, but also with regard to other merits. They would not grant any kind of merit. And then they stopped, you know, negotiations, and they went for, you know, some kind of hybrid warfare against Iran using media warfare, propaganda, encouraging riots, as well as, you know, showing support for the opposition, the guys that have always been supported by the United States and the West, and they are based in Europe and in the United States. Also, they waged cyber attacks against Iran and supported Israel in that aspect. And also, they used Israel as a strategic partner for doing terror attacks and sabotage in Iran. And also, they ordered the seizure of Iranian crude cargo offshore Greece, which was reciprocated by Iran seizing two ships of Greece to show that enough is enough. This is not the Rouhani administration that was practicing appeasement policy. This is the revolutionary government of Raisi, who was elected to office and to power by those who were critical of Rouhani's appeasement policy, because, you know, right, tolerating the United States never ended up in any good result for Tehran. So Iranians voted for Raisi. So his strategy is active resistance diplomacy and showing power. So then they moved to the IAEA Board of Governors to use it also as a leverage, political leverage, diplomatic leverage against Tehran. So as you see, it's a hybrid warfare using different means in order to pressure Tehran to step back. So it seems that the Americans are not prepared, really, to go for real negotiations. They are just thinking of using pressure against Tehran, which has not been successful policy at all so far.
List of anti-Iran sanctions, anti-Iran actions there Elijah Magnier, our guest, talked about. I'm curious if they are under the impression that they're going to continue doing that if there was an agreement. I mean, it seems like that's a line that they have followed and will continue to follow. Do you get the impression, again, we're speculating here, if there was any type of agreement that the U.S., along with Israel, and all the different anti-Iran actions that they've executed is something that's going to continue?
Look, it's very simple. Iran is increasing the weight, in kilos of the uranium. So it has reached 3,000, hasn't reached the 6,000 that used to possess in 2015. And Iran is threatening to remove more cameras. So far, 27 cameras were removed to blind a little bit the IAEA from some sites. At the end of the day, Iran is saying, I don't want the nuclear bomb, and I'm not going to make a nuclear bomb, and I am showing you some of my...
Okay, looks like we're having problems.
I understand that very well, and it's aware that you're not going to go beyond that, and because you're not going to go beyond that, it's not going to lift the sanction, and is blackmailing Iran to force it toward more concessions. This is why the West feels more tranquil about not giving Iran what it's asking, because you're not going to reach the nuclear bomb. That's it.
It's very interesting, don't you think, say, Mostafa Khoshesh, when you have a Borrell say, we are prepared to resume talks in the coming days. What is important for Iran is to fully receive the economic benefits of the 2015 accord. Something that was reiterated by the Iranian foreign minister, in which Borrell repeated, Iran has to receive the full economic benefits. But he's making that statement out of the capital, Iran's capital. Shouldn't he be in Washington telling the American side, lift those sanctions?
Exactly. Exactly. That was what I wanted to say, as a matter of fact. You should be in Washington asking them why, if you're really up for a deal with Iran or talks with Iran, and then why did you declare that they would not remove the IRGC from the FTO list in the Senate hearing and vice versa? You started saying that you would, Rob Molly said at the same Senate hearing that they would go for declaring more sanctions on IRGC. Now, this kind of action was even protested by Rand Paul at the same Senate hearing, saying, what kind of a negotiation is this? You say you would not grant any kind of merit to Tehran, and at the same time, you are adding up to your pressure. So this means that you are adamant to talks. You know, let's be honest. The Americans do not want a fair deal. And Joseph Borrell doesn't have the power, or maybe the EU is not willing at all, and it doesn't have the power either, to pressure the United States. So he is trying to convince Iran. Iran has presented this initiative last month. It's the United States that has been adamant to the initiative, the new initiative, and many others. And it's been the United States that has not been, flexible. And it's the United States that's saying that it's not going to give Iran anything. So what kind of negotiation could be on the way when this is the case? As a matter of fact, the U.S. wants to pressure Tehran, to bully Tehran to step back. But they are coming to realize, especially after Iran's reactions with regard to the seizure of its crude cargo, as well as to the IAEA Board of Governors resolution, which received Iran's tough response, they are realizing that this kind of maximum pressure policy that they condemn, but they still continue under Biden, would not end up in any kind of result for them. That's why they have sent Borrell to Tehran, uh-huh, to soften Tehran's, voice and to encourage Iran to change direction. It reminds me of the same kind of action that they did when they were about to, you know, vote for a resolution at the Board of Governors, I mean, the three European countries as well as the United States, Iran said that it would reciprocate this action. Then they sent some, some parties to Iran to discourage Iran from taking reciprocal action. And they said if Tehran promises not to take any kind of hostile action, then the United States and Europeans would soften the tone of that Board of Governors resolution. Iranian response was simple. Whatever you do under the title of a resolution at the IAEA Board of Governors will receive Iran's response in proportion. No matter what kind of language you use, what kind of action you do, it would be reciprocated. So Tehran did that. As a matter of fact, Tehran not only dismantled 27 cameras that were there mounted under the JCPOA, okay, though there are still many other cameras installed, working, operating under the NPT at all Iranian facilities. Iran also started a couple of cascades of highly advanced centrifuge machines to show that it would answer and show reaction, top reaction to any kind of hostile action to deter any further, sure, U.S. hostility. The Americans, I believe, have come to realize that this kind of bullying policy would not, you know, end up in good results. So, sure, they have asked Borrell to come to Tehran to, you know, discourage Iran from further reciprocal actions.
I'd like to find out from you, Elijah Magnier, whether maybe we're looking at a scenario that is a little bit different from what Sayyid Mostafa Khoshnesh talked about in terms of the EU vis-a-vis the U.S. And that is the fact that we're looking, obviously, at the conflict in Ukraine and how the EU is suffering immensely, much like the rest of the world, really, but in terms of the energy shortages that they're facing, and whether there is an incentive for the EU to want Iran to come back to the fore, to come back to the scene, for them to want to purchase Iranian oil, and in particular, in gas. And that is something that the EU has to convince the U.S. of acceptance, because it's not the U.S. that's going to suffer as much as we're seeing the EU. Do you think that's a possibility?
Absolutely not, because what you're missing here, I've been among the corridors of the EU commissions and decision makers. The EU is colonized by the US. Every single decision taken by the EU leaders comes from the US and looks after the US interest and not the European continent and the inhabitants' interest. We've seen that, as you rightly said, in the war in Ukraine, how the EU imposed sanctions on Russia, and we have inflation going out up the roof. And what's happening is we are paying the price of the wrong decision of our leaders in Europe. And regardless, the Americans are still saying you impose further sanctions. So all decisions made by the EU come from the US. Joseph Borrell would have never come to Tehran without the consensus of the U.S., and anything that Europe is saying is only seeking the U.S. interest in the first place. Of course, it is in the EU interest for Iran to return to the market, because we desperately need of oil and gas. So the energy lacking in Europe is obvious and going to be even worse in the coming month. And particularly when we go toward the end of the year. So the interest of the EU is not at stake here, is only what the US wants, and the EU doesn't have an opinion, really. And we've seen that from 2018 to today with the JCPOA, how Europe was incapable and impotent to do anything toward Iran to respect its deal.
My last question has to go on the statements made by Ali Shamkhani, Sayyid Mostafa Khoshnesh, which he's the Secretary of the Supreme National Security Council. Obviously, what he says needs to get a reaction on. Iran will further develop its nuclear program until the West changes its illegal behavior, further adding Iran's retaliatory actions in the nuclear sector are merely illegal and rational responses to U.S. unilateralism and European inaction, and will continue as long as the West's illegal practices are not changed. Your reaction, please, in less than a minute, please.
You know, as I said, the Rouhani era is gone. Now Iran has been, you know, left